It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We're doing the best we can with very bad laws. We have to change the laws. But we're apprehending thousands and thousands of people a day. And the law only allows us to hold them, as you know, for 20 days because of the most ridiculous laws probably we have in this country. If Ajit had laws like that for 5G, you wouldn't have anything built. You'd never have the first cell put up. But we have horrible, old-fashioned laws that are put in by the Democrats. We're willing to change them. We can do it in, I used to say 45 minutes, we can do it in 15 minutes, whether it's catch and release or chain migration or any of them. The asylum laws are absolutely insane. They come up, in many cases, they're rough gang members. In many cases, they're people with tremendous crime records. And they're given a statement to read by lawyers that stand there waiting for them. Read this statement. And it says, I have great fear for my life. I have great fear for being in my country, even though in some cases, some of these people are holding their country's flags and waving their country's flags. And then they talk about the fear they have of being in the country that the flag they were waving freely. So we are looking at the possibility, strongly looking at, to be honest with you. California, the governor wants to have a lot of people coming in, refugees coming in. A lot of sanctuary cities, so we'll give them to the sanctuary cities maybe to take care of if that's the way they want it, because we can only hold them under the current law for 20 days. So we apprehend them by the thousands and thousands a day.
Yes, President Trump at sort of an impromptu presser standing outside, and that's what he said. And that's just the first half of it, and I'm going to get back to it in just a second. But I would just want to underscore what he's saying. I have to underscore what he's saying. Because no one else is fighting this except him, except for some of his staff. No one else. No Republican leader. Silence. Silence from them. But the president is the only one who seems to be fighting it. Let me just say that Mexican authorities are reporting that a group of about 350 migrants broke the locks on a gate at the Guatemalan border on Friday and forced their way into southern Mexico to join a larger group of immigrants or migrants trying to make their way to the U.S. National Immigration Institute said that migrants were acting in a hostile and aggressive, these are quotes, way, accused them of also attacking local police in Matapa, a Mexican village. Claudia Jacqueline Sandoval, 43, from El Progreso, Honduras, was walking toward Tapachula with her six-year-old daughter. She said, I've been HIV positive for 16 years. But her reason for going north was not just medical treatment. It has been 2 years since I heard from my son. So, of course, it isn't just that we're taking on another HIV patient, which we are, and many of them, they're sick. They need help, so they're coming here. Of course, that's a sympathetic reason. I guarantee you a lot of them are not sick at all. They are criminals, and they're coming here to perpetrate their crimes on American citizens. And many others are not criminals, but they want to come and take jobs and resources. They want to sign up for, you know, whatever benefits they can get. And trust me, there are plenty. We just heard last week that it's our federal banks, the Federal Reserve under George W. Bush, that has been operating that remittance program where Mexican nationals who are here illegally send millions of dollars to their home country. That was set up by George W. Bush under the Federal Reserve under him. It's just amazing. It's amazing the stabs in the back over and over again by politicians against the people of the United States. The president of the United States went on to say this.
I have to say, Border Patrol has been incredible. The job they're doing is incredible. The wall is going up. It's going up fairly rapidly. We're doing another big section. We start another big section tomorrow, but we're building miles and miles of wall. And we're going to have, I think we'll be close to 400 miles built by the end of next year. We need that. Just got back from Texas, and some of the ranchers tell me, you look at Brooks County, you look at other places, some of the ranchers tell me your bodies lying all over the land of people where the coyotes give them a can of soda, and they give them a sandwich, and they say Houston's 300 miles in that direction. And the people don't know what that means. That means they can't make it. That means they have no chance, and they die. It's something I never heard. I never heard it to this extent. Many people die, and they'll say, just head in that direction. And we are doing a lot about it. If we had the wall, we wouldn't have that. If we had the wall, people wouldn't be coming up. Mexico is now apprehending and bringing back to the various countries that we're talking about, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. They're bringing people back to those countries, Colombia to a certain extent, and they're going back to those countries. But we could fix that in so fast if the Democrats would agree. But if they don't agree, we might as well do what they always say they want. We'll bring the illegal, really you call them the illegals. I call them the illegals. They came across the border illegally. We'll bring them to sanctuary city areas and let that particular area take care of it, whether it's a state or whatever it might be. California certainly is always saying, oh, we want more people, and they want more people in their sanctuary cities. Well, we'll give them more people. We can give them a lot. We can give them an unlimited supply. And let's see if they're so happy. They say we have open arms. They're always saying they have open arms. Let's see if they have open arms.
Yes, that was the president. And the reason I played that whole clip is because, you know, honestly, he is the only person with any kind of power who is trying to stop this. And you see the forces coming against him to undermine him at every turn. And if you wonder why Christians, conservatives, people, Democrats, lots of people are supporting President Trump, if not publicly, privately, because they recognize that he is the only person standing between us and the insufferable, unlimited flow of people from other countries, dangerous people, people who will siphon off resources. We understand this. Our politicians don't care. They just don't care. And as an example of that, Nancy Pelosi responded this way. She said, the extent of this administration's cynicism and cruelty cannot be overstated. Using human beings, including little children, as pawns in their warped game to perpetuate fear and demonize immigrants is despicable. Thank you, Mrs. Pelosi. I'm sure that's what just happened, and I'm sure that's what I'm guilty of, too. It hasn't got anything to do with undermining the safety and future of our own children. You know, hers will be fine because she's a multimillionaire, as are most people in Congress now, you see. They live behind walls and they don't really care. The irony of this story to me is that I pulled this story to share with you, I believe it was, I don't know when it was, but the New York Times or the Washington Post did this piece last week in which they were leaking the fact that the Trump administration, they actually talked behind closed doors about, you know, sending these illegal immigrants to sanctuary cities. They actually talked about that at their table. How horrible they actually talked. Aren't they horrible people they talked about in a meeting doing this? And so the president's response to that was come to the mic and said, yes, we didn't actually. I think we're going to do it. We're going to send migrants to sanctuary cities. They say they don't care if they come or not, so we're going to just find out. We have plenty to send them, an unlimited amount, and we'll just see where they stand on this. Well, Gavin Newsom of California had a fit. I wish we had the clip. We don't. But I'll play instead the clip of Lori Lightfoot, who's the mayor-elect of sanctuary city known as Chicago. This is what she had to say about it.
Mayor-elect, what's your reaction to all this? I mean, there's, you know, there's dirty politics, and then there's proposing using human beings as pawns, a way to punish Democrats in cities like yours.
Well, look, the president obviously likes to be provocative. He likes to prompt a response in the media and across the country. But for the city of Chicago, which routinely gets asylum seekers at our airports and coming in through other ways, we've been dealing with these issues really for decades. And as you know, this is a city that was built by immigrants for the last 150 years. So we take this in stride, and I think it's, from our perspective, much ado about nothing.
Well, I mean, the current mayor, Rahm Emanuel, said today that Chicago would welcome these migrants with open arms. Would that be the case when you are mayor?
Of course, because we're doing that now. We have people who are routinely coming to the city. We have a whole infrastructure that's built up to make sure
their rights are protected. I just want you to know that Illinois is going under. They have the lowest bond rating in the country, worse than California. They are close to bankruptcy. It's becoming a nightmare in the state of Illinois. And same thing in California. California has the tech industry to prop them up. But they're just spinning themselves into oblivion, and their policies are madness. I would also mention that New York State is kind of tipping on that as well. In fact, the New York Assembly on Tuesday blocked a bill that was to expand college tuition aid for children of deceased and disabled military veterans. They were Gold Star families who lost their loved ones in the conflict in the Middle East. So they rescinded that office and meanwhile set aside $27 million in college tuition aid for illegal immigrants. That's in the state of New York. There's a lot more to say about that, but it reminds me of this. I personally think that we should have a slate of Senate candidates who are going to run in 2020 who will absolutely run on Donald Trump's platform. And I would lead with immigration, securing the border, enforcing immigration law. I think we could win hands down, because I'll tell you why. There are 53 seats in the Senate right now that are held by Republicans, led by the never-ending disappointment Mitch McConnell. 21 of those seats are up, and including Mitch McConnell's seat. And let me tell you what Senator McConnell just did. At a meeting for, behind closed doors with Republican leaders, I don't know if it was senators, but basically a Republican gathering, he suggested to the Republicans that they run independent of the president, that they should establish their own platform, that they should not run on what he's running on. They should distance themselves from him. He says, my advice to all of our people is to paint your own picture. What difference has your service made? And our races are big enough that where you can make a case independent of whatever else is going on. But he was very specific to run away from President Trump. It's an amazing story. Reminds me of what's happening in Britain. I told you that Brexit was going to take place last Friday. It did not, because Theresa May, who didn't want Brexit in the first place, and all of her fumbling other leaders in Great Britain also do not want Brexit. So they've been doing nothing but putting up obstacles. So the EU has decided that they graciously will let England, the Great Britain, stay in the EU till next October. But the people that supported Brexit are not having it. And I'll tell you this morning, Nigel Farage, who's the former leader of the UK Independence Party, is jumping back in. And I'm telling you, the leaders in Great Britain will fear him. They feared him before. He is going to form a Brexit party. And they're going to have, this is confusing, I know, to us, but there are two bodies. You know, there's Great Britain and there's the European Union. And you heard, I guess, Nigel from Heritage Foundation on Friday was our guest. And he was telling us that the EU, the laws of Great Britain, about 75, I think, percent of them, something like that, now are controlled by EU. Their law in Great Britain is EU law. So the EU is getting ready to have an election. And Nigel Farage, who's a Brexit to the max person, probably was, if one person was responsible for Brexit, it might be Nigel. And so he's forming a Brexit party in preparation for this election in the EU. And he says, we are lions led by donkeys. He also says, one of the other people that's running with Nigel says, our politicians need to listen to what the people have to say. It's an epidemic problem across the ocean. I've got a few other things to say quickly. Tax day is today. Don't forget. And by the way, 82% of middle-class Americans saw a tax cut in 2018. So don't be shy. Go fire your taxes and get a little bit more money, or be able to keep a little bit more of your money than in past years. Oh, Governor DeWine in Ohio signed the heartbeat bill last week, which is a tremendous victory for the people of Ohio. And in the White House, President Trump showed what? Guess what? The Gosnell movie. He showed it in the White House just a few days ago. Isn't that something? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Like, I wanted to have the abortion because I was trying to hide a situation.
When a young mom in crisis walks into a preborn pregnancy center, she's welcomed with open arms and given love, support, and a free ultrasound to meet her unborn baby. This young woman not only chose life for her baby, but heard the message of Jesus Christ and was comforted from the guilt and pain that plagued her. Preborn centers lead the nation in providing free ultrasounds. When an abortion-minded woman sees her baby on ultrasound, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby. For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. And 100% of your sponsorship goes towards saving babies. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Charles P. Reddick, Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Mr. Reddick oversees our nation's revenue and tax agency. Romans 13, verses 6 and 7 reminds us to honor our responsibilities. For because of this you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to lift up IRS Commissioner Reddick. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Be careful what you say to Alexa. I'll tell you why next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. If you have an Alexa, you might want to be very careful what you say, especially if you're in the shower. Bloomberg reports Amazon is listening to customers through Alexa devices. It's uber creepy, folks. They say employees recorded thousands of clips, including a woman singing in the shower, a child screaming. They also allegedly recorded a sex assault. Staffers would then share some of the recordings among themselves through an internal Amazon chat room, especially if they found the clips funny. Bloomberg says at least 7 former Amazon employees came forward with the allegations. Amazon confirmed the Bloomberg report, but they said it was only an extremely small sample of Amazon voice recordings, and they are not recording all their customers. Folks, there's an easy fix here. Just toss Alexa into the garbage can. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News Commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Brett, we just called the reality of what it is. The IRGC is a terrorist organization. We've now designated them. We're always doing everything we can to make sure we protect every American soldier everywhere. But the fact is the IRGC has already killed over 600 American soldiers. So you can't have peace, you can't have stability, you can't have security in the Middle East without weakening the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. That's what our sanctions today were aimed at doing, and we're confident this increased pressure will save American lives and create more stability, more peace, more security throughout the Middle East. You and I have been talking about Iran since I was a member of Congress, and then we had a long conversation when I was the director of the CIA. So it was complicated long before this morning's announcement. What we're trying to do is reduce that complexity, take down this malign activity that the kleptocrats, the clerical kleptocrats in Iran are engaged in, to change their behavior in such a fundamental way that we can be safe all across the world, and certainly in Iraq and in the Middle East. Qasem Soleimani has the blood of Americans on his hands, Brett, as does the force that he leads. And America is determined each time we find an organization, institution, or an individual that has taken the lives of Americans. It is our responsibility. It's indeed President Trump's duty, and we have made tremendous progress in this administration's first 2 years to reduce the risk that any American will be killed by Qasem Soleimani and his Mary Brandon brothers ever again.
Sandy Rios back with you. That was Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. And of course, he's talking about the decision of the Trump administration last week to declare the Iranian Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization. It was, you know, very, well, allegedly controversial among some, to many of us, just common sense. So we're going to talk about that. But I want to make this point. You've been hearing, I'm sure, over the weekend, the remarks of Ilhan Omar. We played them last week where she talked about, you know, somebody did something on 9/11. The venom, I think, with which she speaks is very frightening to many of us because she represents what I will flatly say out is not only the threat of Islamic Sharia teaching overseas and in the Middle East, but also here at home, and as much as they have infiltrated into our own society. I'll talk about Ilhan Omar at greater length. Either if we don't get to it today, we'll certainly do it tomorrow because she is so tied to CARE. She has met on more than one occasion with the president of Turkey, Recep Erdogan. I think that she's a very dangerous person personally, and we're going to get to that. So the Islamic threat, and by that, I'm talking about Sharia, has not lessened. Even though we haven't talked about it very much because we've had our own domestic internal policies, the president of the United States is fighting not only across the globe with the people that he has put in place, like Mike Pompeo and our military, but we're fighting it inside as well. Michael Ledeen knows as much about this as anyone I know. Michael is a freedom scholar at the Defense of Democracies. He's also an internationally renowned scholar on Iran, Iraq, terrorism, international security. He's an expert on fascism. Also, he's been a consultant at the National Security Department, or Council, and the Departments of State and Defense, and we could go on, but then we wouldn't have a chance to talk. His latest book is Field of Fight, How to Win the War Against Radical Islam and Its Allies, co-authored with General Michael Flynn, and Michael Ledeen joins us this morning. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, Sandy. Happy Monday.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Tax day seems so insignificant by comparison to what we're going to talk about here. You know, the President of the United States, I don't need to tell you, Michael, came in and totally did away with and pulled us out of that horrible agreement with Iran. And so I want to ask you, I'm going to assume that people know something about that. I want to ask you, from your perspective, how badly did our withdrawal from that agreement clip the Iranian regime's wings?
Well, I don't think it has clipped their wings. I mean, what it's done is to serve notice on them and on our allies that we're not going to tolerate their traditional form of behavior. But so far as I can tell, we have yet to take action, meaningful action, against the Iranian regime, and that is what we need more than anything else. We need regime change. We need an end to the Islamic Republic.
You know, just to put this in context, I just talked about the Iran deal, but the thing last week, I'm sure you must have been encouraged by the president just simply declaring the IRGC a terrorist organization. Was that encouraging to you, Michael?
Well, we'd already done that. This just added a few details to it. That was not a big deal. It was wildly overplayed, I thought.
All right. Well, just to put this in context, which you could easily do, I was reading Nathan Sales, who's a U.S. State Department ambassador at large and coordinator for counterterrorism, that's his title, said this: when you throw in the money provided to other terrorists, the total comes close to $1 billion. Let's pause to consider that because it bears repeating. The Iranian regime spends nearly $1 billion a year just to support terrorism. Is that ongoing?
Yep. That is ongoing. And it's not likely to change if they can prevent it.
So what is Iran's, what are they trying to do, Michael? In layman's terms, what is it they want? If the end looked like what they wanted the end to look like, what would it look like?
They want to rule the world. What do you think? It's the same story as always. They want to tell everybody what to do. They want a world ruled by, therefore, both radical Islam. And they want it into Western secular democracies. And they want to tell us what to do every day, what they do to their own people. Look at the way they treat their own people, and you know the world they want.
You know, I was reading some just horrible stats and information about what's going on in Iran, Michael, and one thing that I read written by, you probably know this guy, I can't probably pronounce it, I'll probably butcher his name, he's Italian, Giulio Miotti. Giulio Miotti.
Giulio Miotti.
Okay. Anyway, he said, he talks about the draconian rules inside Iran, just to help people understand what Islamic law is really like. It says, he said that Iran recently handed down a sentence of 33 years in prison and 148 lashes to a prominent Iranian lawyer who dared to defend girls who were protesting Iran's forced veiling laws. And then in another recent incident, an Iranian couple were arrested after their public marriage proposal went viral on social media. It is so repressive that they're losing people. How are they losing people, Michael? Because how are people getting out? Are they able to just travel freely?
Well, not exactly freely, but they can sneak out across Turkey and across Iraq. Those are the two main routes out. And there is a sea escape route across the Gulf via Dubai, for example.
The stat, according to what I've read, is that one in four of Iran's most educated citizens are leaving their country. You know, that kind of reminds me, I don't know why this is a random thought, but it reminds me of Cambodia and the S-21 prison and the killing of the intellectuals. You know, the wicked despots can control people if they can get rid of the leaders, the smart people they have better control. And so maybe the mullahs are not too unhappy about the intellectuals leaving.
Well, maybe they're not, but they're a lot happier that the intellectuals leave than that they leave, which seems to be the alternative.
Yeah. How do you see, if you, your assessment of what the situation is in Iran? Honestly, Michael, do you think there's any chance of regime change? Do you see any signs of that internally, or is the rebellion kind of been squelched?
Look, I would like to hear the President of the United States say, Khamenei must go. Rouhani must go. I don't hear that. What I hear is people who seem to believe that if things just get bad enough in Iran, the regime will somehow collapse. And I don't think revolutions happen that way. I think they've got it wrong. I think they believe in the historical process that does not happen. And we're going to have to fight for the freedom of the people of Iran. We're going to have to help them.
Michael, what do you think? You know, we've been fighting Iran indirectly since, what, is it before 79? The Khobar Towers,
yeah,
the killing
49.
Of the Marines.
79 was the year of the revolution. It's 40 years.
Why do you think that no president has really been willing to take on Iran? And as the second part of that question would be, do you think that George W. Bush should have declared war on Iran or rather than Iraq?
Oh, yeah, Robert, I said that in a book at the time. Absolutely. Iran was the major target, not Iraq. That was a terrible mistake.
But why? I mean, why is it a mistake that continues to be made?
That's my favorite question, Sandy. I keep writing that. Why? Why has no American president gone after the Iranian regime? It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, one other thing, the EU, of course, is, from my understanding, is going through the back door and continuing to do business with the Iranians, really, as I believe, according to what I'm reading, ignoring the sanctions by pretending that Iran is complying with this agreement, this international agreement, the JCPOA. And so that makes it almost impossible for us to squeeze them out like we should, right?
Well, I think that our treatment of Iran does not depend on the Europeans, thank God. But it's part of our ongoing problem. We just won't come to grips. It's the same as Venezuela, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, we say Maduro must go. Well, fine. What are you going to do to accomplish that?
No.
The United States has to act. Speeches and sanctions aren't good enough.
Let's talk finally, Michael, about the effect on Israel. The election took place last week. Well, I should just ask you first off, without my commentary, what you think about what happened in the election last week?
I'm happy. I think Netanyahu is probably the best leader we have in the Western world right now.
Wow. You know, I like him too, but a lot of times when I talk to Israelis, they're not so much. But the election showed that actually he got more... I don't understand the process, so I'll probably misstate this, but more seats than he had ever gotten. He was actually exultant about that. So do you think that it's kind of like Trump support here? People don't really want to say it, but then when the chips are down, they actually vote for him?
Yes, there's that, and there's a boredom factor. It's 15 years or something now, and they're tired. You know, people get bored. People get tired of their leaders. They want a new face, something new.
Yeah.
But
you know, I read
he's too good. They need him.
Yes. I read something really that amazed me. I will read this. I don't actually know who wrote this, but this is an Israeli, and this is what it says. Lastly, Israeli democracy is alive and well. There are always those who see ruination over the horizon or disaster around the corner. Much of that is anger at a reality that the observer/commentator doesn't like. But amazingly, we can still disagree with each other without fear of demonization, and the patriotism of the other guy is not being questioned. One of the sweetest aspects of Election Day is that it is a day off. The beaches and parks were crammed on a beautiful day. That love of life is the ultimate vote of the Israeli people. We remain optimistic, hopeful, and proud of our country. I know you're there a lot, and you have really close ties to Israel. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I'm not there a lot. I wish I were. When we travel, we go mostly to Italy, not to Israel. We get off the plane in Rome and carry on there. But, boy, that sure sounds good to me. Hot weather, and I'll take it.
Yes, an optimism. And the other thing I read too, Michael, I know you've had family live there, so you have connections there, even if you haven't traveled there recently. I am hearing that unlike this country, where our younger people are more to the left, in Israel, the young people are more conservative than their elders, which is having an effect on the polls.
It's good news. And, you know, we've got young people who are, too. The left gets all the credit because the media wanted to be that way. But we'll see in our next elections what happens. I think Americans are pretty sick and tired of these crazy people who don't know anything about anything running around telling us how to behave.
Let's come full circle. We just have a minute left. So what I meant to draw the line here was Iran's threat to Israel. What's that current threat? Can you just kind of lay it out there quickly?
Well, they have two main chants. They chant death to America, and they chant death to Israel. And they foment and arm and train terrorists to go after Americans and Israelis. That's their MO.
And probably one of the best deterrents, I'm guessing, is the re-election of Bibi Netanyahu, because I find, I'm sure you would agree, that the Islamists are less inclined to rear their ugly actions when they have strong leadership. They respond when there's strong leadership. Michael Ledeen, Freedom Scholar at For the Defense of Democracies, the author of A Field of Fight, How to Win the War Against Radical Islam and Its Allies. We'll put a link to that on our Facebook page. And Michael, thanks for joining me this morning. We'll talk again soon. Thank you. Sadie Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they be secure who love you. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party won a hard-fought victory over Benny Gantz's rival Blue and White Party after a bruising election. In Israel, you don't vote for individuals per se, but you vote for parties. When the election dust settled, Netanyahu's Likud party, as well as other parties on Israel's political right, had the only path to a majority of the 120 available seats in Israel's parliament, the Knesset. This will be a record fifth term Netanyahu will serve as the Israeli prime minister, longer than any other prime minister in Israel's history.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
It's no secret how American Family Radio is influencing lives.
I'm blessed immensely by it.
Have you called to share your story? Now is the time to do so as we approach our three-day share-a-thon. You might even hear your story on the air.
Without AFR that day, there's no telling where I could have wound up.
These remarkable stories become powerful reminders of how God is using listener-supported American Family Radio. Call 877-876-8893.
This is a unique moment in the history of our country where we have an opportunity to restore the foundations of this nation.
Tony Perkins of Washington Watch.
To a nation that once again honors God. It will not happen unless God's people are informed and engaged.
Join Tony Perkins for Washington Watch. Weekday afternoons at 4 Central and Saturday evening at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The entire global warming movement is based on a series of lies, with the worst of the lies being that carbon dioxide is a pollutant. It's not. CO2 is not a pollutant, it's plant food. Without CO2, plants would wither and die, and we would starve to death. In fact, the more CO2 there is in the atmosphere for plants to absorb, the better off we all are. Because there is more CO2 in the atmosphere, an area the size of the United States has greened up around the world. Plants absorb CO2, and what do they give off in return? Oxygen. If you enjoy breathing, the more CO2, the better. The more CO2 there is for plants and trees to absorb, the more oxygen they release into the atmosphere. Don't let them lie to you. CO2 is our friend and not our enemy.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On Friday, President Trump reiterated his commitment to America triumphing in the competition for the fifth generation of wireless technology. He declared that, quote, secure 5G networks will absolutely be a vital link to America's prosperity and national security in the 21st century. We cannot allow any other country to outcompete the United States in this powerful industry. It's a race that we will win, unquote. To do that, he is, quote, freeing up as much wireless spectrum as needed and removing regulatory barriers to the build-out of 5G networks, unquote. For Mr. Trump's vision to be realized, however, a different approach is going to be needed, one featuring a wholesale free market spectrum auction allowing numerous 5G companies to utilize bandwidths allocated to the U.S. military. Such competition could generate a $1 trillion reduction in mobile phone costs while enabling America to achieve a secure network and lead the world. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
Right, that was Ilhan Omar, and that was a statement she made at a CARE banquet. This is really interesting because her words that people have been listening to now, because some people did something, there was a lot more to her remarks. This news about her making this appearance and saying this was not really widely known until a gentleman named, he was an Australian Muslim cleric. His name is Muhammad Tawadi, who is an anti-jihadist. He's not down with jihad. This is what he tweeted. Ilhan Omar mentions 9/11 and does not consider it as a terrorist attack on the USA by terrorists. Instead, she refers to it as some people did something. Then she goes on to justify the establishment of a terrorist organization, CARE, on U.S. soil. All right, so she said that, and then you will recall that Dan Crenshaw, the congressman in the new congressman of Texas, we've interviewed him. Dan was served in the Middle East, lost his eye about that, and he was interviewed. He actually responded in a tweet, and he said, first member of Congress to ever describe terrorists who killed thousands of Americans on 9/11 as some people who did something. Unbelievable, said Dan. And then Dan did an interview over the weekend, and I wanted you to hear, this is clip seven, part at least of what he had to say.
I mean, this is the height of partisanship, when we can't just come together and properly assume that we should not diminish the acts of 9/11 by saying things like some people did something. Okay, that's not what happened, and we should come together and take note of that. You know, one of the most disappointing things of this entire controversy that I've seen is, again, these members from New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Max Rose, trying to deflect the attention from Omar by attacking me, claiming that I'm not for 9/11 first responders. This is a really dishonest attack. And let me tell you how I am for 9/11 victims and 9/11 first responders. I'm the guy who went overseas to make sure this never happened again, to take the fight to the enemy that committed these attacks. I would go back and do it every day if I could. So to say that kind of attack, again, that is the height of partisanship, and I'm really disappointed in them for saying that, especially coming from New York.
Height of partisanship, well, that's pretty kind, Dan. Can you imagine serving in Congress, having lost your eye? And he was, I have to tell you personally, Dan was still traumatized even when I met him last, I think it was the beginning of last summer, maybe it was the fall. He looks a lot better now, actually. This has been hard for him. He's paid a great price, not only losing his eye, but the trauma of it. And so then he's got to sit and listen to Ilhan Omar in the same chamber, in her hijab, saying the things that she says. Especially some people did something. Yeah, she would know about that. And so let me move on with this, because there's a lot more to say. The president then weighed in on this over the weekend. And he tweeted something that has become very controversial, and really, honestly, who cares? And actually, right now, I can't figure out the clip number. Can you guys find that for me and play? I want you to hear the sound from this. Here we go.
CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something.
So you have no idea right now?
Oh, there's another one. Another plane just hit.
Some people did something?
Oh my goodness, there is smoke pouring out of the Pentagon.
Some people did something?
It just flew straight into it.
The president tweeted that. By the way, we should put that on our Facebook page. And he put, "We will never forget." Well, you can imagine the firestorm, and who cares? Who cares? I'm really fed up with this. I have to tell you, the New York Post did a front page story where they showed the towers, the famous picture. I'm sure you've all seen. It's a still shot of the fuel. You know, the cloud that comes from exploding fuel. It's kind of got an orange color to it, and the title is "Representative Ilhan Omar 9/11 was some people did something." Here's your something. 2,977 people dead by terrorism. All right, so that's, you know, thank God the American spirit is still there. But, of course, quickly the American spirit is attacked. This is from one of the leaders of this organization that supported Ocasio-Cortez. It's called Justice Freedom, something like that, Justice Democrats. They raise tons of money. The guy that runs it has a foreign name. I can't think what his name is, but I think he was working with Barack Obama. And they've raised a ton of money. They picked out Ilhan Omar to run. This is what he tweets. Rupert Murdoch, who owns the New York Post, inciting more fear and hatred of Ilhan and Muslims in the New York Post this morning. And then we've got Rashida Tlaib, the Muslim member from Michigan, who says the New York Post knows exactly what it's doing, taking quotes out of context and evoking painful imagery to spread hate and endangering the life of Representative Omar. Shame on them, and shame on Rupert Murdoch. Oh, I swear, CARE and the Islamic adherence to jihad, to Sharia, are so clever. They are so clever when it comes to twisting things. And actually, I'm going to go back to this Australian cleric. If I can find this quote from him, he's the one that started this, remember? And he was the one who reported on Ilhan Omar and her statements at that conference before CARE. He says, he retweeted to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Omar, "You are so bright, you make the sun jealous. Only you could figure out a way to use the Holocaust to defend an anti-Semite who doesn't even believe in the Holocaust." And of course, he's talking about this. I want to find this poem that she used. I've got a lot of, obviously, I have a lot of stories here. Ilhan Omar, I mean, Ocasio-Cortez used this poem that, it's not a poem, it's a Martin Niemöller's quote, famous quote. He says, you know, first they came for the Jews and no one cared, and then they came for, you fill in the blanks, and then they came for me. And that's the quote she used in defense of Ilhan Omar. And the outrage from that is just overwhelming, because Martin Niemöller was talking about the Nazis, obviously arresting various people around people who were their neighbors, and no one did anything. And then they arrested more people, and then more people, and then more people, and then they came for me. And Niemöller's point is well taken. We all know what that means. So Ocasio-Cortez tweets that, like, that's Ilhan Omar. The president is making it dangerous for her. So is, you know, Dan Crenshaw, who lost his eye. Poor Ilhan Omar. They're coming after her, and they're going to come after you too, because she is innocent. And of course, the point is that she's not innocent. That is an incredibly insidious twisting that I pray the American people can understand. Ilhan Omar's philosophy, the jihadist philosophy, the philosophy of the Muslim Brotherhood, is to kill or convert infidels. That means Christians, Jews, and any of you listening who do not embrace Sharia law. That is their creed. That's what they want. They are perpetrators. They are not the victims. So when Ilhan Omar says, in fact, let's play clip 12 again so you can hear again what she had to say.
CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
Yeah, so that's that dripping. That's just sickening to me. It is sickening. And then she goes on to make the case, you know, the problem is that we Muslims have been, you know, actually, I want to play that CBS New York report. That will expand. I think she said, I know, she said other things that night when she was speaking for CARE. Let's listen to more of it. Clip one.
CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
That was the clip posted Monday by a controversial Australian Twitter user. Yesterday, it was retweeted by Texas Congressman Dan Crenshaw with the comment, first member of Congress to ever describe terrorists who killed thousands of Americans on 9/11 as some people who did something. Unbelievable. New York Congressman Peter King is also outraged.
Absolute disgrace. I mean, this is an insult to everyone who was killed, murdered on September 11th.
Congresswoman Ilhan Omar was speaking at a fundraiser for CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations Los Angeles chapter, on March 23rd.
This is becoming a habitual manufactured outrage.
Hussam Elouch is the executive director of CARE LA.
She did not want to dignify these terrorists, and the topic about which she was talking about was CARE. She's talking about how CARE established a civil rights work, how the American Muslim community has been feeling since that horrific act.
Here is an extended clip of the comment.
Far too long, we have lived with the discomfort of being a second-class citizen. And frankly, I'm tired of it. And every single Muslim in this country should be tired of it. CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties.
Elouch says people should watch the entire 20-minute speech.
Yeah, they should. I'm going to interrupt the crew. That's CBS New York. And the point I want to jump in here and make is you have to know, yes, she's right. CARE was formed after 9/11, but I'll tell you why. Because they wanted to propagandize what had just happened. I could talk to you a long time about that because I know a lot about that. They were actually meeting in the office of Grover Norquist, leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, getting ready to go to the White House the day 9/11 happened. And by a series of really bad choices or intentional infiltration, the Muslim Brotherhood leaders ended up being the ones in the White House, hosted by George W. Bush, courtesy of Grover Norquist and Karl Rove. And suddenly, President Bush starts telling us how Muslim is a peaceful religion. Trust me, that was coming right out of the dripping, lying mouths of the Muslim Brotherhood, who already, we know now through the Holy Land Foundation trial, were already planting the seeds of undermining this country. We just didn't know about it. And CARE was going to be the PR, the voice, the front face, the people that made Islam look good. And they are still the ones that come out front in the cameras and twist everything. They're masters at it. Let me tell you more about them. The FBI and the Justice Department have both banned CARE as an outreach partner because of its Islamist agenda and ties to Hamas and terror funding. In 2007, the U.S. government labeled CARE as an unindicted co-conspirator in the trial of the Holy Land Foundation, financing the Hamas terrorist group. In November 2014, CARE was designated as a terrorist organization by the United Arab Emirates. And by the way, Ted Cruz and many other people in government have been trying to get CARE designated as a terrorist organization for a very long time. CARE was listed by the U.S. government as being among individuals, entities who are and were members of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood's Palestine Committee and its organizations. It was a secret body to set up by the Brotherhood to advance the Brotherhood's Hamas agenda in America. And I've got to jump to Ilhan Omar and her direct connection to that. We already have seen she's doing fundraisers for them. She is a front person for them. By the way, her response to all of this, of course, Nancy Pelosi now is demanding the Capitol Police beef up security because she is, of course, the victim. And, of course, this is being repeated by Justice Democrats. It's being repeated by all those that are on the marginal fringe in the left and Congress and others, that poor Ilhan is the victim here. And she, because she said some people did something, she's not guilty of anything. Anybody that says anything in response to that, they are creating, inciting violence against Ilhan Omar. You know it's ridiculous. You know it is an absolute twisting of the truth. And that's why I'm speaking more loudly than normal, because it really ticks me off, the lies and deceit. And I want to make sure that you're clear about what's true here. Ilhan Omar tweeted this after the President Trump tweeted that compilation of what she said with the 9/11 reports. Thank you for standing with me against an administration that ran on banning Muslims from this country to fight for the America we all deserve. To fight for the America we all deserve. To fight for the America we all deserve. Ilhan, we know exactly what you're talking about. And in those slick, dripping, slimy words, we know exactly what you're talking about. We know what the Muslim Brotherhood means, and we know what you mean, and we know what CARE means. And so this is what we're up against. By the way, I don't have time to play the... let's just say that Ilhan Omar was all about these terrorists in Minnesota being given slight sentences. She interceded for them. She begged for them. And we know that some of them never even recanted. That was one of her first... That was her act as a legislator in Minnesota. We also know that she met with the head of Turkey, an Islamist, on more than one occasion. There's more to say about Ilhan Omar, and certainly we will. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.